and he'd almost won. That is why I'm running for Congress. I will be a champion for our families, our economy, and the strength of our nation.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Brad Paff. I'm a Wisconsin state senator. I'm a lifelong resident. I was born and raised in this congressional district. I'm running for Congress because I believe that rural America is just as important as anywhere else. And quite frankly, I think it's been overlooked and left behind for too long. I was raised on a family dairy farm not far from here, where my family's been farming since they first came to this country in the 1800s. I met my wife, Betty, at a 4-H leadership luncheon. It's here in western Wisconsin that we raised our two children. I've had the opportunity to do rural policy and economic development for U.S. Senator Herb Kohl and Congressman Ron Kind. Both of them have endorsed my candidacy. I spent 8 years at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the Obama administration, and I had the opportunity to serve as Governor Evers' Secretary of Agriculture until the partisan politicians in Madison wouldn't confirm my nomination because I stood up for our family farmers and our rural residents. Today, I'm a Wisconsin state senator representing this area. I ask for your vote on August 9th. Thank you.
Thank you. Our first question, we will start with Mark Newman. That question comes from Mike Biermeister of WXOW News 19.
Okay, Mike. So it took nearly 3 decades for a piece of gun control legislation to become law. However, some Democrats say the new law doesn't go far enough, while others in Congress say it goes too far. Now, if you're elected into office, would you propose more gun control legislation? And if so, what would that look like?
So a lot of times we talk about, you know, common sense interventions for our gun control or for our gun violence risk in the community. And some of these make a lot of sense. But I'd like to go, such as magazine size limitations and assault weapons ban. But I'd like to go further and recognize that when we have something that causes this much injury and death in our community, we recognize it as a public health issue. And we've treated public health issues in all kinds of things, like car crashes or infectious diseases. And we do that by making interventions, studying the issue, and then testing whether or not the interventions we do actually result in improvement and more safety for our communities. So I approach it from a sort of a public health perspective as a pediatrician, that there's a lot that we got to do to get a better handle on this risk in our community, but we need to do it not so much just as common sense, but scientifically to understand where the risks are and how to manage them.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
I am grieved by the amount of gun violence in this community. I mean, in our nation, and the fear that people have, even to go to work, that kids aren't able to ride their bikes, that people are worried about going to a fair or a parade. I know the lethality of weapons. I am the one on this stage that has been trained and has worn a weapon, a Glock, an M4, an M16. I have been under attack. I know about active shooter events. It has been my job to get people to safety. I can tell you that warning is the most important thing that we need to do. And I have been sometimes the first candidate and sometimes the only candidate to speak out about gun safety and community safety. I can tell you we need to ban ghost guns and we need to start violent history checks. And we need to have integrated support for state, local, and federal response to violence.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
Well, thank you. Without a doubt, we need to do everything we can to keep our communities and our children safe. As a Wisconsin state senator, I've worked in order to pass legislation, provided amendments on legislation that would fund greater efforts for our law enforcement. We need to make sure that we have background checks that are put in place. We need to make sure that we have red flags, warning signs that are enacted in the legislation. We need to fund mental health assistance. When we get to Congress, we need to close this loophole, this Charleston loophole. We need to work together in order to make sure that our children and our communities can feel safe and secure when they go to school and when they go out and about on the town. So I will always work together to make sure our community stays safe. I have a background of working to make sure that we can provide our law enforcement and our communities with the tools that they need in order to make sure that people stay safe and secure.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
The time for thoughts and prayers are over. We need meaningful gun reform now. I know that Wisconsin has a rich heritage in hunting and gamesmanship, but we're not talking about AR-15s at deer camp. As somebody who is a candidate of distinction from Moms Demand Action, I support universal background checks. I support the enforcement of red flag laws, that are put up when someone is having a mental health crisis or is a domestic abuser so they're not harmed to themselves or others. I support the elimination of the Charleston loophole. At a labor union meeting, somebody asked me and raised their hand, "Are you going to take away our guns?" And I said, "No, I'm not going to take away your guns, but I want everyone to be as responsible of a gun owner as you are." And I think these are a lot of things that we can come together around to solving this issue.
Thank you. Our next round will begin with Deb McGrath. This question coming from Hope Kerwin of Wisconsin Public Radio.
With so many Democratic candidates on the ballot this year, what makes you stand out?
Well, first, I am the candidate that speaks up about issues that other people aren't talking about, like the LGBT community, like healthcare, like gun reform, like immigration. We have not talked about these things for many, many years, and we need to talk about them now. I'm a mom. I am the only mom on this stage, and the future is about education, healthcare, reproductive rights, and everyone feeling safe in their communities. And finally, I have been fighting for this country all my life. I have 25 years of working together with people across the aisle to make sure that we have mission accomplishment in the places of our hardest crisis moments. And I was promoted 9 times in 18 months. And I was awarded our nation's career commendation for courage and mission accomplishment. I can work across the aisle to get things done in Washington, and I am going to work tirelessly for Wisconsin.
Thank you. Brad Path.
I can win. I'm the only candidate on this stage that has defeated a Republican. I defeated a two-term state senator, Dan Kopanky, that represented Western Wisconsin in the Wisconsin State Senate from 2003 to 2011. When he tried to make a comeback in 2020, with the help of the people here in Western Wisconsin, we won. I have stood up for family farmers and rural residents in Western Wisconsin my entire career. I have served at senior levels at the U.S. Department of Agriculture as well as at the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I have traveled this state. I have stood in dairy barns, cheese plants. I've been in diners. I've sat at kitchen tables. I've heard firsthand what's happening out here. We need to have someone that's representing this district in the United States House of Representatives that knows this district, that's been there through time and time again. I know the people and I know the communities of this area. I know that we have to work hard in order to lower health care costs. I know we need to make sure that we fight disinflation. I know we need to rebuild our manufacturing sector. I know there's work that needs to be done with our supply chain. I know that we need to make sure that we keep our schools, public education strong. I'm the candidate, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
I'll pose this question back to voters. Does Washington represent you, and who on this stage best represents you? I'm a working-class candidate. I grew up working-class. I'm still running a small business and a nonprofit and a 19-county congressional campaign all at the same time. And I think we need less career politicians and less political elites representing us in D.C. and more everyday folks stepping off the same sidelines to fight for working families. I have the most organized labor endorsements of anybody in this race, and I'm proud of that because I think those folks know that I'm really going to stand up and fight for working families.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
You know, I'm a progressive voice when it comes to talking about issues that are before us in the community. And what I mean by that is I like to approach problems from the perspective of the we. And I recognize that there's also conservative voices in our community, and I can even recognize them speaking in myself as well, and libertarian voice. But in the course of this campaign over the last 5 or 6 months, I have come to realize that the preoccupying concern for everyone in the Democratic Party is who will be able to prevail in the general election. And that's what we're really sort of focusing on. And I think that when I reflect on that, I realize that I have the competence, the compassion, and the collegiality to do that job, both during the race and once it gets to serving in Congress. And part of that comes from the maturity of my age. Part of it comes from my experience of working as a physician. Part of it comes from even being introduced to the legislative process in the city. And I think that's what makes me stand out. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next round of questioning will kick off with Brad Paff, a question coming from Scott Robertshaw of WIZM Radio.
Thank you. These are tough times for teachers.
Yeah.
They've had to expand their role because of the pandemic, shifting between teaching in person and remotely. There are protests, at least in La Crosse, over what they consider low pay. They're under attack from parents upset with what's being taught in school and things like that. The former U.S. Education Secretary recently said she doesn't believe there should be a Department of Education. As a member of Congress, what would you do to support our teachers?
Well, thank you for that question. Education is the bedrock of our democracy. Education is the great equalizer for all of us within our economy. As a Wisconsin state senator, I fought hard to make sure that we continue to provide the resources for our schools, may they be rural or urban. It isn't easy right now. It has been very, very difficult for our educators. It's also been very difficult for our school children. We need to make sure that we keep our schools safe and keep them secure. We need to make sure that we have school dollars, school aid dollars that are available, regardless of the zip code. That has to be available. We need to make sure that we value our educators as well, to provide tools for them to succeed. May that be providing assistance when it comes to tuition reimbursements at universities or student debt. May it be more recruitment tools that we could provide our educators. All of those are tools that are needed in order to succeed and help our schools continue to stay strong.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
I'll start by saying that I am a proud product of public schools and want to do everything I can to ensure that our public schools have adequate resources and funding. That includes mental health resources, both for our students and educators. It's been tough with the pandemic and doing a lot of the virtual education that our teachers have had to pivot to do. I think that also comes with supporting teachers' unions and having, an in-depth line into what it is folks that are looking for. A lot of our funding from the education perspective here in Wisconsin comes from the state, so having a good line into state legislators that I'm advocating, in particular for rural communities that are often underfunded and are often going through a teacher shortage crisis. And working to incentivize, I think, teachers on the national and federal level of, how can we help them to pay back student loans more quickly? So there's a pipeline of educators with the teacher shortage crisis that we're about to have.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
So I mentioned already that I tend to look at problems from a progressive perspective. And I think this one with education is particularly salient. It really illustrates the problem that we're facing in our community right now. Which is going to be more important, me, myself, and I, getting ahead for myself, or are we going to do this together and take care of all of our children as a communal effort? I think that our education starts right at birth, with giving longer periods of time for parents to be home with their child during those first formative months that are so important. Also, preschool, K through eight, and then college. All of this should be a communal responsibility, and it should not be shared simply as an individual obligation that you can reward yourself for. So I would like to approach education from that perspective, and that way we can really respect our teachers and our care providers and our professors at all levels for the great contribution they make to the development of our children.
Thanks for the shout out, Mr. Newman. Deb McGrath.
I get extra time for saying your name, right?
Well, public schools made me who I am, and my mom was a teacher. And in our family, we said the best crop is kids. We need to incentivize this profession because we need the best teachers. They are the backbone of our community, and schools are our safe haven. This is where kids grow up and learn to be future citizens and that they are part of a community that works. We need to make sure we fund pre-K. We need to make sure that IDEA is fully funded so that schools or the local areas don't have to make decisions about this important resource for people with disabilities, because those people are making great strides for our community. I don't support school vouchers. I think we need to fully fund our public schools. And I want to make sure that we have that every student has full opportunity for work study, for through a trade school, for college, and that won't be saddled with huge loans. So I think it's not just about teachers, but it's the kids and those communities they support.
Thank you. Our next round of questioning begins with Rebecca Cook, and this question comes from Chris Hardy of Seven Rivers Alliance.
I'd like to ask about supply chain challenges. More than 2 years after the start of the pandemic, businesses from nearly every economic sector continue to have challenges with the availability of products. What can be done to ease these bottlenecks and prevent them from occurring in the future?
Thanks for your question. As a small business owner, I understand those challenges very much, and I've had those same challenges myself. I think the thing that comes to mind first is that, you know, we need to make more in America. We need to manufacture more in America. I'm someone, you know, that is a supporter of union jobs and making more here. I also think that it's important to hold corporations accountable, with some of the supply chain issues, but also with a lot of the price gouging issues and the inflation that we've seen and the rise of everyday goods and the cost of everyday goods from gas at the pump to the cost of things at the grocery store. And we need people that are going to hold folks accountable for those rising costs.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
So it points again to a problem of making profit the sort of god of everything we're going to do in our industry. And I remember many years ago, my brother, after getting his business master's degree, he pointed out to me the benefits of just-in-time ordering, that we don't have lost assets just laying on a floor or a warehouse somewhere. And our industry today has pushed that theory of taking out every little bit of slack in this complex network, because slack could reduce that half penny profit that you can get. And then you end up with stress not being able to be managed in a very complex system. And we have had a great deal of stress in the last 3 or 4 years. So I'm not sure what the right answer is, but that's my perspective on it, to encourage industry to be more allowance of buffers in the system.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
Thank you. The supply chain issue certainly has hit us in Wisconsin because we feed and equip the world. But this is also a worldwide problem, and it has been exacerbated by COVID and absolutely by our global instability, and that the last administration made this work by stepping out of many of our alliances. We need to work in partnership to make sure that our product gets to market, and we need to increase attention to our infrastructure so that our roads and bridges and even our waterways can support this return of product to market. The supply chain is so important right here in this district, and I will work to get it done.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
Well, thank you very much for the question. It is one of the leading issues, without a doubt, that take place out here today. We need to rebuild our manufacturing in this district, in this state, in the upper Midwest. We've lost it, and it's really, really unfortunate. We need to take a good look at what we can do for workforce development as well. We need to continue to invest in our workforce to make sure that our workforce is prepared and trained for changing technologies that are taking place, to make sure that we can continue to compete and succeed in a world economy. But without a doubt, we need to continue to invest in our infrastructure. That's roads and bridges. That's also the lock and dam system. What we can do to make sure that we can get our products to market. As a Wisconsin state state senator, I've invested in supply chain initiatives. May it be when it comes to investing in our infrastructure, may it be on broadband and internet technology, as well as workforce development. All of these tools are extremely important, but we need to make sure that we recognize the fact the loss of our manufacturing sector in the upper Midwest, particularly in Wisconsin and, and here in western Wisconsin, has harmed our overall quality of life. And we need to do better, and I will do better.
Thank you. This next round of questioning starts off with Mark Newman. We go to Emily Pyrick of the La Crosse Tribune.
Do you anticipate supporting President Biden for re-election? And if not, what do you think a alternate candidate could bring that he hasn't?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's bad enough to be first. You know, I don't have any opinions on President Biden's position or likelihood of running or what my attitude's going to be about that right now. And in terms of who could be an alternative, Emily, I'm blank on that also. My perspective really has been focused over the last 6 months on what's important to us here in our part of the world in western Wisconsin and meeting people and listening to them. And I honestly don't feel that I'm able to expound on an opinion like a talking head in the political commentators, so I'll have to pass.
You can leave that to me, the talking head, Mark.
Yeah. Whoa, nice comeback. All right.
Deb McGrath.
I'm fighting for the people of Wisconsin. I've already shown that I don't have allegiances, and I am not seconded to anybody. I am standing up for the people of Wisconsin, and I am listening to them. So when I look at the political future, it is really about what we can accomplish to make sure that we have a better healthcare, better economy, we have better security, education, that we lower drug prices. We have got to get this done for people. And I can work across the aisle. I've pledged. My endorsements have all been because of my leadership and the work that I have done and that the acknowledgement that I can do it in the future. I am beholden, and I will only endorsement I care about is the people of Wisconsin.
Thank you. Brad Path.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the only endorsement I care about as well as the people here of Wisconsin. And my entire career, I've worked on behalf of the people here of Wisconsin. But to answer your question, I compliment the president for the work that he's done to put shots in the arm on COVID. I recognize the fact that he led the Western world in standing up to a brutal dictator in Putin. I think getting an infrastructure bill passed through Congress is no easy thing, and I think we recognize the fact how important roads and bridges are. So I think those are good things. But do I think more work needs to be done? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We need to get to work when it comes to fighting inflation. We need to get to work when it comes to lowering these drug costs and holding these pharmaceutical companies accountable. We need to get to work to make sure that we can continue to keep our communities strong and keep our communities safe. This is work that needs to be done. I'm ready to get to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
I'll start by saying, like my colleagues, I'm focused on this district. But I will say that I think that we need more folks running for office that are representative of our actual populations. I think I'd like to see more folks running for office that, you know, have working class backgrounds, that come, you know, from all different age groups, that come from all different professions. I'd like to see term limits be something that is not, you know, an idea, but something that actually happens to limit how long people stay in office and are beholden to special interest. I think that we'd find an electorate and a democracy that's more reflective of who we are.
Thank you. I've actually got the next question. It was submitted to me by the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area. Deb McGrath, you'll start us off. I love this question because I view the urban-rural divide as one of the defining features of politics around the country, but perhaps especially here in Wisconsin. And the question submitted to me by the League was this: what are the values and issues that unite both rural and urban voters in the 3rd District, and what are you doing to connect with and serve those voters? Deb McGrath.
Thank you, Anthony. This is one of the most important questions in this whole district, because for too long, our rural districts have been forgotten. And there's resentment. And we've seen this. This needs immediate attention, and I'm going to make sure that Wisconsin gets its fair share. That is why I'm in this race. Our urban areas have been models for public health and education. We need to make sure that our rural areas have got that same attention so that people, when they grow up, that they know that their kids can go to great schools, that they can get great health care, that they can have a great job, and that they don't have to work two jobs, and that they can also have a super retirement where they are, and that they can have internet. Those are some building blocks so that their supply, that their small business, that their farm, so that they can be sustainable and innovative. Just last week, I was at Farm Tech Days. I spoke with someone from the federal government there that said that this district was one of the, that of all the grants that were available for innovation and to make sustainable agriculture had not even been tapped because they didn't know about them. Believe me, I'm going to have the best constituent services from day one, should I be elected to Congress, because it is all about every single constituent. And I've been listening to them. It is about being treated fairly.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
Well, I'm from the country, and I represent a rural and an urban state Senate district. It's about listening. It's about respecting. It's about showing up. It's about making sure that you're really hearing what people are seeking, what they're asking for, what they want to be able to accomplish. I've done that. I know that what we need to be able to do is this, is we got to turn down the volume a little bit. We got to turn up our listening skills. We need to put ourselves in other people's shoes. We need to recognize the fact that we all want something similar. We want our children to succeed. We want to make sure that we have something to continue to be proud of with our work and our way of life. We want to make sure that we're all making a difference. I have always stood in rural areas as well as urban areas, and I reach out my hand, and I want a partner, and I will continue to do that as a member of Congress.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
As the daughter of dairy farmers, I speak the language of rural Wisconsin. As a part of my campaign, I took a 19-county district tour to far corners of this district, not just the urban places like, you know, Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Stevens Point, but small communities like Hustler and Platteville to listen to people. June, I think lots of us spent time at dairy breakfast, and when I was introducing myself, I didn't introduce myself as, "Hi, I'm Rebecca, and I'm a Democrat." I said, "Hi, I'm Rebecca. I grew up on a dairy farm, and these are the values that I care about." And I think that that's what we need, somebody that's able to speak about these issues in a value-centered way, that's able to bring people from both sides of the aisle together. I think primarily, though, folks feel forgotten by their elected officials, and part of that is showing up and running a constituent-centered office with multiple district offices and having a chief of staff that's based in district to really solve a lot of these issues that rural communities are facing.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
Well, I, Anthony, like you, have spent a lot of time trying to understand what we call the urban-rural divide. And I've given it a lot of thought, and it comes down, for me, to this large economic reality that we're all living under, and that is that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Because in this economy and in the market as it is, if you have a little advantage, you can get a lot more advantage a lot quicker than someone else. And that's what's happened in our rural areas, is that the life, the rich, lovely life of rural life has been evaporated, has been decimated by mega corporations on the supply side squeezing, and mega corporations on the processing side squeezing, so that the people in the middle, the processors in the middle, are being squeezed out of existence. And we are having a community that is drying up, and unfortunately, the same experience is going on in urban areas as well.
Thank you. For our next round of questions, we begin with Brad Paff, and we go to Mike Biermeister of WXOW News 19.
So PFAS contamination continues in western Wisconsin. Many of our communities have been impacted by this. Families are forced to drink out of jugs of water. If elected, how do you see your role in continuing to secure federal dollars? We've seen federal dollars already, but how do you continue? How would you continue to secure more funding?
Well, thank you for that question. First of all, we know the seriousness of PFAS, especially here in western Wisconsin. Just today, Governor Tony Evers, as well as the Attorney General Josh Call, was in French Island to meet with residents and to talk about the fact that they're filing a lawsuit against the manufacturer of this forever chemical. A couple things need to happen. Number one, at the federal level, we need to set a standard of what is an acceptable standard for this forever chemical. We cannot have this hodgepodge situation we have right now where Minnesota has an acceptable standard that Wisconsin doesn't. That is not fair. That is not right. That is impacting people in a harmful way. The second thing that we need to do is we need to make sure that we provide the tools for our homeowners as well as for our small businesses through no fault of their own have been impacted with this forever chemical in their water system. So we need to find the money available through an infrastructure a package for that. I will fight hard for infrastructure money for PFAS. I've done it in the state Senate. I'll continue to do it if I get the opportunity to represent you in Congress.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
I like to think about the environment like I think about politics and that it's all local. I think water quality is one of the biggest issues in this district, obviously with the PFAS in the waters here in La Crosse and French Island, but also in the City Wells and Eau Claire and other communities throughout the district. And I think we all deserve the right to safe drinking water. I feel like there's a lot of promise in the CLEAR Act, which is a state bill that Wisconsin conservation voters have worked on that calls for more testing in general. Some communities don't even know it exists within their well waters or in their city wells, that calls for more research into PFAS in general and also calls for remediation, so the cleanup of what already exists. And I'd like to see something similar to that brought to the federal level so that there's a standard nationwide.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
You know, one of the things we need to do with PFAS is certainly get a lot more scientific evidence about the health risk. It is real, and it has been obscured by the producers so that don't make it into a problem that we'll have to do something about. But ultimately, water is life. And that's one of the fundamental rights that we all have as human beings, and our government needs to take responsibility for all of these rights. It's not a government to serve the producers and the corporations, but it's a government to serve we, the people. And whatever it takes for people to have the resources to be able to drink safe water is ultimately our obligation together as a governance of the people, by the people, and for the people, even if it means very expensive processes to clear the PFAS out of the water, which can be done, but it's going to take some investment.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
Water is a human right, and people will fight for water. And everyone in America should be able to drink out of their taps. Can believe me, I think it's the most beautiful taste of all. When I look at PFAS and what it's done, not just to our families, but businesses, to our wildlife and our fowl, our fish, it is creating a problem that is going to take decades, perhaps centuries, to solve, and that this has been a federal problem that now takes federal response and an integrated response. This is not just about the EPA. This is about the Department of Transportation. This is about the Army Corps of Engineers. This is about a federal problem that needs to have federal response. We look at osmosis, that even the filters are still going to be poisonous. So we have got to be able to look at this from the beginning until the end, and we're going to have to use federal response on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook leads us off in this next round. We go to Hope Kerwin of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Medical providers in Wisconsin say there is confusion around what reproductive care is legal in our state after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade and a 173-year-old ban on abortion went back into effect here. I'm wondering, how do you think Congress can help provide clarity on the issue of reproductive care?
Thank you for your question. It's very timely. Never in 2022 did I think that this is what we would be fighting for, but here we are. I think Congress's role is working to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. You know, I don't know what Republicans are looking for, but we're back into the 1800s in the law that we have here in Wisconsin. And I think Republicans are calling for government-mandated pregnancies. And I, as a congressperson, don't want to be in the room with someone and their partner and their doctor. I think it's an invasion of privacy. And I respect women and LGBTQ folks to be making those decisions for themselves.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
This is the work of our Congress. It is the work of our legislative body for the whole country to establish in law these rights that are already ours and don't need to be described as being in the Constitution. And it's more than just the issue of abortion care, but it's our rights to everything about ourselves, the sovereignty of our bodies and the sovereignties of our identities. And for a third party to try to make me into something I'm not, that is an assault. For a third party to approach a woman who's carrying a pregnancy and tell her she doesn't have the opportunity to care for that pregnancy the way she wants to or interrupt it, that's an assault. And certainly whenever we talk about people being injured, that's an interest of our government. And so I believe the Congress has every responsibility to make solid laws and to become functional for that and do it.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
I have a lot to say about this. I wish I could have had ceded others' minutes. So I'll get right to it. Reproductive rights are a human right. And that this is part of the radical right-wing agenda. And this is not just the first right that they want to take away, but this is going to privacy and LGBTQ rights. And I am the one mom on this stage, and I can tell you that having a child is a lifelong commitment, and it is a life-changing decision. And it should be made by a person with the family and the doctor, and there is no place for legislation in this. And there are economic consequences. I myself found out unplanned pregnancy. By the time I got back to my unit, I had been stripped of my command, and I had resigned my commission. I know that families need to make these choices themselves, and this hits marginalized communities even worse. So we, LGBTQ, black and brown, people of color, so we need to codify Roe, and I am going to get this done.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
I was the first Wisconsin state senator to ask Governor Evers to call us as legislature back into special session to address this issue. Not only do we need to codify Roe v. Wade at the federal level, it needs to be done at the state level. As a result of the inaction of the Republican majority in the Wisconsin state legislature, we now have an 1849 law put in place in the state of Wisconsin, 12 years before the Civil War, 70 years before women had the right to vote. We've gone back 173 years. This is something that we cannot have. In 2002, my wife went into early pregnancy, preeclampsia, at 27 and a half weeks. Through science and through medicine, we were able to keep little Lizzie going until she was born at 36 weeks. But the thing is this, we wanted more children. And I'll never forget the OB looked my wife and I in the eye, and he said, you know what, don't take the risk. And you know what, there was no room in that doctor's office for politicians. That was a personal decision. We need to remember that. The Supreme Court decision that came out in June is something that Congress must move forward with and codify Roe v. Wade.
Thank you. We start with Mark Newman for this next round of questioning. We go to Scott Robert Shaw of WIZM Radio.
The 3rd Congressional District has been leaning more and more Republican in recent elections, and whoever wins this primary election will face a Republican candidate who almost beat a 24-year incumbent in the last contest. What would you say specifically to Republican voters to convince them that you are a better choice than Republican Derek Van Orden?
Well, that's kind of easy. It's not a high bar. But my approach to what you're referring to is to go straight to the voters and to find in their hearts our belief in these primitive, deep-seated principles of being an American, which is our freedom and fairness. It goes right back to the origins, 250 years ago. And to appeal to those deep-held values that we all share as Americans, and to bring that forward and to say, how can we best make that happen? Now, we've alluded to the fact that people have been hurt and that there's a lot of revenge that's rolling in the spirit of people. And I believe that what we need to do is to draw forward that hope and say, we can still do it. Let's do it. Let's don't just get caught up in tearing things down, but try one more time. And then if elected or when elected, I will go to Congress and keep that promise that I'm not going to forget how important that is to you.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
I grew up in a small town here in Wisconsin. And the beauty of that is that there was calm, not chaos. And that's what people want to return to. That's what they want in a leader. They want somebody who's so steady, principled, leadership, bold leadership, someone who will step up for them and who's listening to them. I have loved this state enough to defend it. And they know that. I spent 25 years going to the toughest locations to make sure that they were safe. Believe me, when I come home, it's this that sustains me. I can work across the aisle because I always have. I'm putting my country above politics. When I walk in a parade, put my hand over my heart and say, I'm Deb McGrath, I'm running for Congress to represent you. I don't talk about which side of the aisle we are on. I say, I'm an American, and I'm fighting for you.
Thank you. Brad Paff.
For the last 42 years, this district has been represented by a Republican and a Democrat. Steve Gunderson on the Republican side, Ron Kine on the Democratic side. Those two individuals recognize the fact that the most important thing to do is not play partisan politics or just do ideological games. What they've done is they worked for the people of this district. I know this district. I know the people and the communities of this district. I will always put the interest of the people and the communities of this district first. I will always, and I have always stood up for our family farmers, our rural residents, for the people that live in our neighborhoods here in the city of La Crosse and elsewhere, to make sure that they have the resources and the tools that they need in order to succeed. I'm a Wisconsin state senator that has received bipartisan support in the past when I won an election in 2020. I've done my best to reach across the aisle in Madison to make sure that we have infrastructure funding in this district, from broadband to roads and bridges. I will continue to find common ground, because now more than ever, we need to find common ground in order to move our state and our nation forward.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
Derek Van Orden is part of the radical right, and he's not a part of a Republican Party that many of us grew up with. There's a lot of folks that are supporting my campaign that are Republicans. They're John McCain-style Republicans, right? They know I'm not going to agree with them on everything, and they're not going to agree with me on everything. But they know at the end of the day that I'm going to do the right thing. And I think that comes with running a value-centered campaign and running a value-centered office, which I've done throughout this time. I haven't just stayed in the urban parts of the district or the bright blue parts of this district, but I've made a point to go out into deep red parts of the district and hear from folks and hear why they're frustrated with their elected officials. And I think a big part of that is showing up and listening. So it's coming together to talk about those values, but I think it's also about showing up and listening. So.
Thank you. Our next round of questioning, we go to Chris Hardy of Seven Rivers Alliance. We will start with Deb McGrath.
The availability and affordability of childcare continues to be a serious challenge for our region and, quite frankly, for our country. Our surveys have revealed that many parents are not working, or they're working part-time simply because they cannot find childcare. What specific proposals or policies would you support to ease the childcare crisis?
Thank you. I love this question because it is central to revitalizing our economy. I believe this is the number one thing that we need to get done for families. And the situation is that right now, for every 100 people who want child care, there's 80 spots, and that it's so expensive that people can't afford it, sometimes more than a college education. And again, this hits our families who are service-oriented, who are families of color, our marginalized communities, even worse. Many women have to go back to work 10 days after they've given birth. We need to incentivize this profession. We need to make sure that people can get paid a living wage to take on this. These are those wonderful people in our lives to be able to hand to child care providers. And we need to incentivize the workforce, and then we need to be able to subsidize or give tax. We need to have the tax credit. That needs to be, the child care tax credit needs to be codified again, make it permanent. So we need to have support families to get child care. We need to incentivize the profession because it has been marginalized and invisible.
Thank you. Brad Path.
Well, thank you. This is a very, very important issue, and I hear about it firsthand when I travel the state Senate district and I travel through up and down this congressional district. So we do. We do need to incentivize the profession. We need to make sure that we get more child care providers and workers within the system. We need to make sure that we incentivize small businesses as well. What can we do to help grow child care providers? That's so very important. But we also need to make sure that we tackle the overall cost. What can we do at the federal and the state tax codes in order to make it more affordable for child care? Because the thing is this, if we do not tackle this problem, if we do not recognize the seriousness of this, it is going to continue to hold back our economy moving forward. And as a result of that, we're going to continue to see struggles and frustrations with our families as well as our small businesses moving forward.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
The solution to our child care shortage is not, one size fits all for every community. I had an opportunity on our 19-county district tour to connect with child care providers in rural communities like Black River Falls, where they came up with an innovative solution of coming together at-home providers to form a cooperative. Here in La Crosse, I had an opportunity to talk with Mayor Mitch Reynolds, who had an idea about pulling folks together, smaller businesses, mid-sized businesses that can't provide a child care facility for their employees to form a cooperative, and each have shares within that. I think it comes back down to the cost of child care in general, both, for families, but also providers and their ability to make a living. But what I see from the conversations I've had is what solutions are communities figuring out on their own, and then how can I, as their representative, start to steer federal dollars in that way to replicate those efforts throughout the district?
Thank you. Mark Newman.
Over the last few decades particularly, we have become more and more aware of the importance of those years, early years of development. And so I think that what's really happening is we are undervaluing and not recognizing the importance of child care. It is, as I said in response to an earlier question, it is part of the educative process from birth all the way to young adulthood. And it's an issue of justice that children can grow up in our society and have fulfilling experiences and qualified care providers and not, people who are doing it on the side, but really to be supported so that they can do an excellent job. I've cared for children who have died from injuries in the hands of their care providers. And that is shocking to even say today. It's something that we can solve because we can approach the importance of these early childhood year formative experiences as the charge of our whole community.
Thank you. Candidates, we have reached the closing statement round of this debate. We have time for 45-second closing statements for each candidate. And Brad Paff, we kick things off with you.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank everyone for being here. I want to thank the media panelists for asking the questions. Thank you very much. Derek Van Orden is a clear and present danger. He is a threat to our democracy. He cannot be serving in Congress. He was in a restricted area on January 6th, that shameful, awful, deadly day. We cannot have someone with that kind of character, temperament, or judgment representing us in the United States House of Representatives. I have worked hard in order to make sure that I listen to all the people here in western and central Wisconsin to make sure that we move forward in a way that invests in our people and our communities, recognizes individual hopes and dreams that's taking place, and working together to implement public policy to provide people and families with the tools that they need to succeed. I'm Brad Paff. I'm running for Congress. I ask for your vote on August 9th. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
We are 20 days to go until Election Day. So basically, it's tomorrow, and folks are already voting. I'm our best shot at keeping the state blue in November. I'm the daughter of dairy farmers, the sister of union workers, and I'm a small business owner. And I can speak the language of rural Wisconsin and talk with independent voters. I want to be your relentless fighter for our way of life and work to improve access to affordable quality health care, protect Medicare and Social Security, and take on big corporations that are price gouging consumers and causing the rise in inflation. And I hope to earn your vote on August 9th.
Thank you. Mark Newman.
This campaigning is actually a lot of fun. There's many great opportunities, and you always know what you're going to be doing that day. But I also have to think about what comes next. You know, what we're really orienting toward is who is going to be the one who's going to do the work in Congress. And so that's the thing I've had to reflect upon. And as I was contemplating getting into this race, I consulted with friends and people I trust, and I was told, Mark, be careful, you're too honest to be a politician. Or the other one is, you're really too nice. And that's kind of strange to me that those two qualities would be things that they would warn me against for being qualified to do the work. I said earlier, I believe that I am competent, I have compassion, and I have had the experience of growing older, some more years, and some of those experiences as a physician. And I think all of those will qualify me well to do the job.
Thank you. Deb McGrath.
I'm a realist, not an alarmist. And it's fair to say these are extraordinary times. Women's rights to choose have been revoked. We have sky-high inflation, and our democracy is at risk. Now is not the time for politics as usual, and now is not the time for typical politicians. Now is the time for bold, effective leadership. Now is the time for someone to stand up to the radical right, and that someone is me, because I have been fighting all my life for this country, for this state, and for you. Now is the time for someone to lead on day one for Wisconsin. Now is the time. Go to the polls. Vote for a better future. Deb McGrath on August 9th.
And audience, how about a round of applause for our candidates? And how about a round of applause for our media panel?
Wait. You didn't just close it.
I did. I started. Yep.
Well, remember that Election Day is August 9th, and remember to participate in the election. For more information about this election, you can go to myvote.wi.gov. From the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, I'm Anthony Dragoski. Thanks again to our candidates. Thanks again to our terrific media panel. This was a pleasure to participate in. Thanks most of all to you, our audience, for tuning in. And we'll see you in a future debate right here at UW-La Crosse. Keep tuned in for our October debates. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to special election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio featuring the Democratic primary candidates for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. This debate, along with other election coverage, is available at wpr.org/election22.